This is Tanya, Igeres HaKodesh, page 209, otherwise Kuf Hei, Perik Dalet, and we're starting at the word rak, five lines from the bottom of the page. So we're in the middle of explaining the pasuk, which or the statement of our rabbis, which says that the Jewish people will only be redeemed through charity. Then the chapter goes on to explain about how there is a concept of lev, of a person, avodah shebalev, service of God with the heart, but we also have the concept of pnimius halev, which means the inner aspects of the heart. So you have chitzonius and pnimius, the outer and the inner aspect of the lev. And the outer aspect of the heart is when a Jew is infused by having thought about the greatness of God. And so therefore the enthusiasm and the excitement and the love and the inflamed feelings are a result of an intellectual analysis. However, pnimius halev, the inner aspect of the heart, is something that is deep down in the heart of the Jew. It does not depend on any analysis. It's a reflection of the attachment and the unity that there is between the Jew and God, and doesn't lend itself to any kind of analytical process. That is called pnimius halev. And as he ends off, we ended off last week, that this is the concept of pnimius nekudas halev, is lamala mibchinas hadas, it's beyond das, beyond knowledge, beyond analysis, which spreads forth and affects the midas, the attributes, the emotional attributes. On the contrary, this pnimius halev, the inner aspect of the heart, comes from chachma, which refers to wisdom, which is the deepest intellectual attachment that a Jew has with God, and that is something that's beyond intellect, beyond analysis, beyond rationale, beyond reason, and this is reflected in this level of pnimius halev, and this is the godly spark which is inside every Jew. That's a quick resume of what we learned last week. So now we continue. Rak hi bechinas ha'ores chokhma elyoina shelamala mi'abina v'adas. This pnimius halev, this inner aspect of the heart, you can call it the essence of the Jewish soul, is a reflection of chokhma, of this highest level of intellect, wisdom, which is totally attached with God, beyond rationale. Uba malubish v'gonas ar Hashem mamash, and in which is enclosed the light of God actually. And this is the godly spark which is in every single Jewish soul. Now just to explain Chochmah a little bit more, because he's not doing so at this moment, but elsewhere in Tanya it explains the concept of Chochmah. And Chochmah it's based on the analysis of the word Chochmah, which if you take the letters, twist round the first two letters, so instead of ches kof, you make it kof ches, which spells koach, which means a power, and ma means what. So the question is now, what power? What is this power? And or you could say it's koach ma, a power we know not what. It's a level of intellect, it's the first level of intellect. It's a level which is really before any analysis or rationale has been applied. It's also called the inspiration. It's called the Baraka Maverick, it's called a flash of lightning, if you like, a flash of inspiration. It's the first thought. And what's special about it is, it's a kind of interface between the intellectual process and the presence of godliness in the person, or just generally the presence of godliness. So you can have this analysis within the soul of the person, within the neshama. You have the 10 divine attributes. So you have the three intellectual ones of Chochmah, Bina, Das. We're going down in level now, starting with Chochmah. And then you have the seven emotional ones of Chesed, Gevurah, Tiferes, Netzach, Chayyid, Yesod, Malchus, which we're not going to explain individually now. So you've got that structure of the 10 within the Neshama. You also have this structure within each of the worlds, as we have discussed worlds before as well. the concept, the world, the names Atzilus, Bria, Yetzirah, Asiya, each of these worlds has this similar structure of the 10 divine attributes. But what is special about Chokhmah is, it's a kind of interface, because it's not something measurable, it's like the point. It's an immeasurably small point, it's a flash, that doesn't have duration, if you like. It's like as if it doesn't exist, really. It's there, but it's not there. It's called the pintler, the point. It's called the yud. The yud is the smallest letter. Like the first letter of God's name is yud, k, vav, k. So the yud refers to Chokhmah. The yud is the concept of a dimensionless point. So it's there, but it's not there. And what, as I was beginning to say before, well, what's special about it is it's an interface between godliness as a spiritual force or power and the entry of godliness into a system of controlled processes and interactions, or the chain system as it's called, the first point at which godliness like enters the chain is through the concept of Chokhmah. So it's got this kind of interface idea behind it. So from Chokhmah flows Binah and Das. So something does flow from it. And the Ein Sof, the infinite light of God, blessed be He, is flowing into Chokhmah. So as I said before, it's this kind of interface. But because it's so difficult to grasp, because it's beyond intellect, that's why it is the vehicle for godliness to enter into the person. Chokhmah is also the concept of bittul, self-annulment and self-abnegation. Why? Because if a person has got a feeling of self-importance, then we have the concept of Ein ani vahu yecharim ladur. That God says, if someone has a feeling of self-importance, then there's not room for both of us. I and you can't live together in the same space. Because if you're full of self, you can't be full of God. Any feeling of self negates and pushes back and pushes away any concept of bringing godliness into the situation. The more a person annuls themselves, pushes their own ego aside, the more room, so to speak, in inverted commas, of course God doesn't need room, but the more God is able to enter into that scenario, because he's not being pushed out by the person's own ego. And Chokhmah represents this concept of the ultimate non-ego. It's just the point, the nekuda. Yeah.
It is said, though, isn't it, that in some instances one should have, not an egoistic, but use certain arrogance if it's going to benefit the greater good, surely. Obviously, if you get overtaken by the ego, then you're going down a downward spiral. But there are times where you should exercise certain arrogance. For instance, someone who's in head of a community, and some other people are trying to go in charge, then he should not kind of take it lying down and show his passion for everyone to hear everyone. He should kind of have that kind of arrogance, but in the sense, is he pushing away godliness by doing that?
Right, that's an excellent question, and I was letting you expound on the question to get the point over. And the answer to that is, you're absolutely right. There is a situation where a person's assertion of self is necessary and important, and would not in itself push away godliness, because it's being used as a vehicle for strengthening godliness. So that really is the criterion. Why is this person exercising the feeling of self? Yeah, let's analyze. If it's just an ego trip, and I'm here, and I'm the big guy, and I know it all, then that's a negative feeling of self. But if, as you quite rightly describe, there are certain cases where a leader has to assert himself. It talks in the Talmud about the great sages asserting their honor over someone else, because their honor is the honor of the Torah. Now this enters into a whole area, because the Hasidic approach here is always to err on the side of humility, mm-hmm. even in such cases. In other words, even though they are a great sage, and they're very learned, and they know more than anybody else in the vicinity. The Hasidic approach is to say, even so, I'm still not going to behave in this with this feigned arrogance, if you like, mm-hmm. that is necessary to establish status. However, even having said that, there is still a concept of what's called Ga'in Yaka, the pride of being a Jew. Like yesterday was Lag Ba'ayma.
Is that Ga'on Yaakov, did you say?
Ga'on Yaakov. The word Ga'on is connected with the word Gaiva. Gaiva meaning pride and self-esteem. So Ga'on means like the word Ga'on. Is a Ga'on, is a, you know, a big person, a great person. All connected words. So we heard yesterday at the Lag Ba'ayma parade, I don't know if you were there or not, but the master of ceremonies, Rabbi Pink, cited one of the reasons why the Rebbe established this whole ceremony of the Lag Ba'Omer parade and children marching with banners and keep Shabbos, keep Kashrus, I go to a Jewish school, join my Jewish school, all these things, that the Rebbe wanted to engender Jewish pride. See, part of the problem with Jews in exile is that we suffer an inferiority complex.
That's very true.
And you got this, you know, what's called the galut attitude, the galus attitude of, you know, keep it quiet, you know, don't show you're Jewish, and, you know, so don't dress Jewishly, don't have a beard, don't wear a hat, don't wear a black jacket, because they'll notice you're Jewish, you know, but all by all means, just don't let them know you're Jewish, you know. That's the Jewish approach has been for many thousands, you know, many hundreds of years. It's understandable, because if Jews are attacked, in verbally or physically or emotionally or whatever, because they're Jewish, you know, eventually the word gets through, it's better to keep a low profile and not be a Jew in the open. But the Rebbe worked very hard to turn that attitude around and say, no, you've got to be proud of being Jewish. Don't be ashamed to display that you are Jewish and that you've got Jewish principles and you observe Jewish festivals and you leave early for Shabbos from work and that you only eat kosher and you won't join the boys in the pub and this kind of thing. So what's the Lag Ba'Omer parade? The children marching out proudly, you know, Masiva Shabbos and join my youth club and I'm proud to be a Jew. So is pride good or not? So the answer is, I don't know if I ever shared with you a yechidus I once had with the Rebbe, when my first yechidus actually, first time I had a personal audience with the Rebbe, in 1965, when my brother got married to an American girl, so we all went to the wedding in 1965, and it was this time of the year, my first yechidus was in here, was the first yechidus after Nissan. And I went in there, and one of the things was that it was the early years still, and although I'd been brought up in the Lubavitch shul, but I didn't really understand what Lubavitch was all about. Still trying to work it out, but we're a little bit further down the line. So one of the things that impressed me at the time was that, like, when you come into 770, like, you feel the Rebbe, you know, even though he's in his room and doing something else, or he didn't appear the whole time. On the contrary, he appeared for Mincha, he appeared on laning day for laning, for Ma'ariv, very often not for Shachris in those days, and then Yechidus, and then on special days. But I mean, you didn't see him all the time, but you felt his presence very much. Now, when I was davening in the morning, that day that I had Yechidus in the evening, you know, I was like davening, and I was somehow or other, I couldn't help this feeling of awareness of the Rebbe's presence in shul, even though he wasn't there. And I was rather troubled by this, because I wasn't, you know, in yeshiva, we talk, you know, when you're davening, you think of God, and you don't think of anything else, if you can. And here's me, like, the Rebbe's thought, dominating the thinking. So when I was in yechidus that night, that was one of the questions I asked him. And I basically told him, you know, I said, I find myself thinking of the Rebbe at, you know, in the middle of davening, and surely this is wrong. So the Rebbe was reading, you know, what I was writing, and he was turning the page up. And when he came to that part, he looked up and gave me a big beaming smile. You know, absolutely beaming. And he says, and yeah, we spoke in Yiddish, he said, "Du trachst auf mich? You're thinking of me?" You know, as in surprise. So, you know, I was taken aback by this tremendous smile that Rebbe was giving. Then he got serious. And he said, the answer to your question is, I was basically asking him, surely it's wrong. He said like this, If what you're thinking about brings you closer to God, then whatever it is good, even if it's mathematics. Now that reference to mathematics is because I was telling him that I was had changed course from in university from doing economics to mathematics for various reasons. I won't go into it now. But Lamaisa, I'd basically left and changed during that time, and I was asking him for a blessing. So that was his reference to mathematics, and I really did like mathematics at the time. So he's saying, if what you're thinking about brings you closer to God, it's good, even if it's mathematics. But if what you're thinking about prevents you from thinking about God, then no matter what it is, it's no good. That was his answer. Now this is a very profound answer, because it's saying, this is what Chassidus talks about a lot. You know, what's a Rebbe? What is a Rebbe? This answers the question, what is a Rebbe? So the answer that's given by Chassidim as to what is a Rebbe is what Moshe Rabbeinu said. Moshe Rabbeinu, Moses our teacher, said to the Jews, Anochi omed bein Hashem uveinechem. I am standing between God and you. What does this mean? I'm standing between God and you. Am I a barrier between God and you? So Hasidic teachings explain that there's two kinds of barrier. There's a mechitza is a barrier, yeah? There's a mechitza hamafsik, and there's a mechitza ha-mechaber. One kind of barrier does divide off between two sides, and there's another kind of barrier which joins the two sides. So let's take an example of the mechitza between the men and the women in shul. Is that intended to join them? No. It's intended to divide between them. So the men are on one side, the women on the other, and you're not supposed to see through. So that is called a memutza ha-mafsik. An intermediary that splits off between the two and stops them joining each other, which is what we want in that particular situation. But let's take a window. You've got a window in the front of your car. It's a barrier. This is no good. I want to see what's going on out there. The answer is yes, this enables you to see what's going on. Because if there wasn't that barrier of the glass, you'd be blinded by the wind and the rain and all the schmutzes driving along. It'd be a major problem if you have a hole in a windscreen. So what do they make is a piece of glass, which is a barrier, which enables you to connect with the other side in a way that is proper and won't cause problems. So this is what a Rebbe, that's what Moshe Rabbeinu was saying, I am standing between you and God to join you to God, not to be a barrier, not to divide you off from God. I'm standing between you and God to join you. Moshe goes up to the mountain, brings the Torah back, and prays for the Jewish people, brings them close to the Jewish people. All the time he's encouraging them to come close to God. So that kind of barrier is great news. A barrier it is, but it's a barrier that joins the two sides. And that's what a Rebbe is. A Rebbe, the leader of the Chassidim, on any tzaddik for that matter, what's his whole job? His whole job is to join the Jews closer to God as much as possible. Get them to daven better and to learn better and do mitzvahs better and to be... He's not trying to be a thing for himself. He's trying to be... In fact, he's trying to keep as low profile as possible, really. If the Rebbe could achieve what he's trying to achieve without interfering, he would do that too. But he sees that people need him and want him, and they want brachas, and they want encouragement, and they want advice, and it's all to help them serve God better. So he knows he's got a job to do, but it's all joining. The Rebbe himself used the analogy to a group of students in the old days they had the telephone exchanges. So in the really old days they had a human being over there. Before the automatic exchanges, which connect up your lines when you dial a number, you know, you would buzz the thing round. You've seen the old pictures of the old thing. Hello, Flossie, are you there? You know, and the girl was at the other end, and she'd say, what number do you want? I remember it. It's not that long ago. It's only 50 years ago, right? And they would answer, what number do you want? You couldn't dial yourself. And what was the girl doing? She's connecting you with the number you want. She's not a barrier, she's a connector. And that's what the Rebbe said to a group of students. They asked him, what is the role of a Rebbe? And he answered them, he used this analogy, and he said, I am merely connecting up your lines with God's lines. Yeah? Let me just finish the point before we go on to your next question, which is this answers your question of where does pride come in? If the pride is there, is being used to improve the situation and make sure that the rabbi has authority to make sure his congregation is run according to Torah teachings in a disciplined way, but a pleasant way, then that he's using his pride for good. He doesn't let himself be a doormat walked over by everybody and just let them do what they want. Lack of discipline is no good for a congregation. So he has a certain power of personality that says, okay boys, you just listen to me, and this is the way we're going to do it, and I don't truck any argument. This, you know, it's not democracy over here. The rabbi decides what we're going to do. And then everything runs harmoniously, and the shul runs harmoniously, and everyone can daven properly. So that pride has been used to bring us closer to God. Whereas if the pride is that the rabbi is an arrogant so-and-so, that's always putting himself in the way, and causing damage in that respect, and causing disrespect to the Torah, because he's always arguing with the other rabbi down the road, and causing disrespect and so on, then that's the wrong kind of pride. So therefore the answer really is what the Rebbe said in my Yechidus, it all depends what the result is and what it's used for. So the answer to your question is, yes, we do need self-abnegation, we do need bittul, but we also need a certain element of pride as well. And in fact this has got to do with Matan Torah. This is one of the sikhas of the Rebbe based on Likutei Torah, where he asked in the Alter Rebbe's Likutei Torah, the first Rebbe wrote his books on Hasidic teachings, he asked the following question. And this is mamish the same thing as Matan Torah. It leads in beautifully, because we're now in the final stretch after Lag BaOmer, before the end of the Sfira. We're in the final third of the proceedings. So the Alter Rebbe asked the following question. And we know that the mountains were told. Why was the Torah given on Mount Sinai? So the Medrash says that all the mountains were arguing with each other and saying, I want the Torah to be given on me. I want the Torah to be given on me. Mount Carmel and Mount Hermon and Mount Sinai didn't join in. That's the whole point. And the only one that didn't push itself forward, was Mount Sinai, which is a very low mountain. Mochich Mikol Ramaya, as it says in the song Koribon, which is one of the Zmiyas of Shabbos. It's the lowest of all the mountains. So God said, you're all arguing, me, 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 me. Who's the one that's not saying me? The lowest of the mountains, that's Mount Sinai. I'm going to do it on you to teach you humility. Ask the Alter Rebbe, if God wanted to teach humility, he should have given the Torah in a valley. The ultimate humility is to be low. Not high, like a mountain. Okay, medium high, yes. But it's still sticking up out of the plane. So go for the plane or go under the plane. Go for a really deep valley. And then you'll teach, you've got to be low. Humble, woo, you wring your hands and everything. So the Alter Rebbe answers, no. The Hashem's teaching us the other lesson as well. That we have to be proud to have the fire. So you have to be a bit of a mountain. A low mountain, yes, you know your limitations and know we have to be humble, but proud to be a Jew, proud to say I'm from, proud I'm keeping Torah mitzvahs, proud I'm one of God's people, and not to have this galut attitude. So that really is the same thing all over again. You got your answer from that Likutei Torah. Okay, so let's move on a little. Oh, you were going to ask something else, but...
Well, we might as well get through this much.
All right, as it goes quite slow. So we've now dealt with why Chochma is the point at which there is this revelation of the Pnimius Halev, the inner truth, the inner essence of the godly soul within a Jew. So now the question is, if we've all got this Nekuda, this point within our own soul, which is the Pnimius Halev, it's taka there in every single Jew. So why aren't we living like that? Why aren't we living like that? We should all be behaving like that, on a level of deep attachment to God all the time. So why are we not Zeicha to this, is what he's asking. Bibchinas, Pnimius, that we should be living on this over the page, living on this level of Pnimius. Haina lefisha bechina zai hi etzlai bebechinas golos v'shivya. The bechinas golos hashchina mamash. The reason is because this aspect of ourselves, it's in exile. What does it mean in exile? In exile means you're in a place where you don't want to be. Yeah, you've been forced to go somewhere where you don't want to be. I live in Stamford Hill, and there's been a Gezeira decree, you know, government decree. Potash has got to go and live in Bermondsey. No, you're not allowed to live in Stamford. I'm away from home, I'm away from my family, I'm away from where I want to be. That is what exile. We're in exile, the Jewish people. We want to be in exile with Hashem and the Beis Hamikdash. No, we're in England. So exile means you're there, you're intact. In exile, you're not missing anything. You're intact if you're in exile. Your body's all there, but you're not where you want to be. So this Nekudah's Pnimiyus Halev, which is in the Neshama, which is the essence of the Neshama, is housed inside the Nefesh of Bahamas. First of all, it's housed inside the Neshama, because it's the essence of the Neshama, and even the other parts of the Neshama are external to it. But then you've got five parts of the Neshama, Nefesh, Ruach, Neshama, Chayah, Yechida. This is the Yechida we're talking about, the top level. And then you've got the lower levels. And then in turn, there's the Nefesh HaSichlis, which is the intellectual soul, and it's inside that. And then in turn, you've got the Nefesh HaBahamis, which is the animal soul, and it's inside that. And then in turn, the animal soul is enclosed inside the body. So it's all inside that. So this little Nukuda, this little Pintala, is hidden away deep down inside a kind of prison situation, in a place where it doesn't want to be. And all these other powers that have got some level of jurisdiction over the body are all vying for expression and trying to do what they want to do. And this little Pintala is not getting a say. It's too much enclosed in the baggage. So when we've referred before to these special occasions, when a Jew's Jewishness is challenged, go in the church and serve bow down to the cross. Oh, now that I can't do, no matter what, because my whole existence as a Jew is being challenged. Then it'll come out. But day to day living, I go to work and I come home. Do I go to shul? Do I not go? If I go to shul or not, that's not challenging my Jewishness. I'm still, I still feel very Jewish, even if I daven Maariv at home, we say. Mm-hmm. Although, you should really go to shul, yeah. Right? But still, does anyone say, if I daven Maariv at home, I've negated my whole Jewishness. I'm not a Jew anymore. I mean, it just doesn't. Although, earlier on in Tanya, the Alter Rebbe says, we should invoke those kind of analyses to get ourselves to realize that every Aveira is in some small way an act of defiance against God and denies our true nature. But that's something you have to convince yourself. Mm-hmm. But no Jew feels that he's negated his Jewishness by davening Maariv at home. So therefore now becomes a battle, will the Neshama get its way to daven Maariv in shul? And it might or it might not, depending on what the weather's like, and how tired you are, and how well trained you are in these things. All the issues start coming up. So that is Golos. When this little Pintala Jew is inside all of that garbage, or baggage I should call it, because it's not really garbage, but it's baggage, it therefore is in exile and can't do what it wants to do. And that's what he's getting at here. So, he b'chinas nitzis elokusha b'nasha likis. This is the very, this godly spark which is in his godly soul, that's the Shekhinah, the divine presence within him. The reason for the exile is what the rabbis say, that they were exiled to Babylon and the divine presence went with them. That's what exile means, that it's there. That's because God allowed this inner aspect of the Jewish soul, which is the godly spark within him, to be enclosed in an opposite power. That is to say, in the unclean garments of matters of this world, and the desires for this world, which is called Babylon, in a spiritual sense of Babylon. This is the foreskin which covers the circumcision. It's like the extraneous, undesirable covering which we need to remove, and it covers over the inner aspects of the heart, which has described this answers a tremendously big question that we have in the Chumash. We know that we have to have circumcision. We have to have a bris when we're 8 days old. That is called bris milah, the covenant of the circumcision. So why on earth, in other places in the Chumash, does it say the words, Umal temes orlas levavachem, you shall circumcise the foreskin of your heart? What's going on here? I thought the bris is when I'm 8 days old and I'm done with. Finished. What do you mean? So where am I circumcising my heart? What's this? Heart surgery I need? That's a genre. So the answer is this. The Arla that is symbolic of an extraneous covering which is preventing the truth being revealed. And the first thing in a Jewish child's life is to get rid of the physical manifestation of that. So at least that part's done. That's the easy bit. But the rest of our life as a Jew is working on getting rid of that aspect of our heart. Because the heart contains, as we learned earlier on in Tanya, the two sides. And you've got Levavacha, which means Shnei Yitzrecha, the Yetzirah and the Yetzirah. And we're battling our whole lives with the Yetzirah. And what is that Yetzirah? An Orla. It's a covering over the truth of our real Pnimius Alev, the true Jew, which is the Pintali Yid, the spark, which is inside each and every one of us. And this Orla, the Yetzirah, is covering it up. And we're battling with that battle the whole of our lives. Not so easy just to schneid and cut it off. So that's why the Torah says, "Umaltem es orlas levavachem." You got to keep on at it and circumcise the orla, the foreskin of your heart. And now we understand it. After explaining in this chapter, there's something called Pnimius Alev. Now we understand orlas alev, because orla is the externality, the foreskin. And in circumcision, we know there are two parts of the process. There's mila, which is removing the grubber orla, which is the thick foreskin. And then we have priya, shame orla, gasa o klipadaka. Priya means that, without going into too much detail, I don't want to give you tummy troubles by describing the circumcision ceremony, but I'm not a male, but a little bit I do know. So what they do is they cut off the skin, but then there's a very thin membrane below it, and that they split and peel back, and that's called priya. And it's mal v'loy para ki l'loy mal, where the Torah says you have to do both. You can't just do the circumcision, but very thin membrane has to also be removed. It's not cut, it's peeled back. So that's called priya. So that is the orla gasa, you got the thick skin there, which is cut. Uklipa daka on the thin membrane. The chain orla salev yesh gam kin tavas gasas v'daka is milo priya. It's the same thing with our heart, that we've just used the analogy, that we have to get rid of the yetzirah. So we've got two aspects of yetzirah. You've got the grobber stuff, the real big tivus desires, and then you've got the very, the thin, which means the very delicate things that are wrong in our approaches and our attitudes and so on. As we just said before, if a person just cuts the foreskin and doesn't do this other membrane, it's as if he didn't do it at all. Why, if he does mila without priya, without this membrane as well, because there's still a covering over there. It might be a thin one, but it's still covered. It means you haven't revealed the real, truthful pnimius, the inner aspect. So also in our avodah, we might remove our more external and what you might call the grobber things. Yiddish grob in Yiddish means thick and coarse. The coarse aspect of our behavior. But there are more refined aspects of our behavior which are also undesirable. And they need to be removed as well. So it's a constant battle. A constant, challenge for us throughout our lives to achieve this orlas alev, the circumcision of the uncircumcised part of our heart. And we'll leave it there.
Yes, it's good. It's not a telephone.